Welcome to the Mountain Grapevine program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes. On today's show, we're going to be interviewing Philip Norden. Norden is the managing partner of a family-owned business called the Treehouse Vineyards down in Monroe, North Carolina. And just as a personal note, I can tell you that I've tasted many of his wines, and they're absolutely fantastic. So, Philip, tell us a little bit about the history of Treehouse Vineyards, how it got started, and a little bit about your background and how you learned the business.
Well, thank you guys so much for having us on today. We're a family-owned business in Monroe, North Carolina. We are a little bit unique in the fact that the property that our vineyard is on has been in my mother's family for over 200 years. And in 1990, my grandfather passed away. I was in high school, and my mom and dad and I moved to Monroe to take care of my grandmother. Once I left the house and my grandmother also started to get up in age, my dad came up with this crazy idea that he would build a treehouse. And he built this treehouse just for him and Lamont to be able to have a day in on Friday and Saturday night, because at that point my grandmother's health had deteriorated to the point that if they wanted to go out and have a glass of wine somewhere or have a bite to eat, they would have to bring a registered nurse. So dad built this crazy treehouse right next to the house so they could be close to my grandmother, and that was kind of it for a little bit. He was making some homemade wine down in the basement, and my dad grew up on a tobacco farm, was also a textile chemistry major, and so he had a chemistry background, and so he started kind of piddling around making some wine. And one day he let us taste some of the wine, and also some of my relatives, and we all turned around and looked at him and said, you know, hey Pop, this is pretty amazing stuff. So that was really where my father started to make wine from, originally, like I say, down in the basement. And then about 12 years ago, he decided he wanted to try some muscadine grapes. And he had met a gentleman down in Florida that had just planted a vineyard. And during their conversation, my father found out a lot of the research and development of muscadines, especially in the wine industry, was done at NC State. Well, that was the last thing in the world my dad needed to hear. My dad played basketball at NC State. My grandmother had worked at State for 30 years in the agriculture department. So if you can imagine, my dad hears this on a Saturday, shows back up to town on Monday, orders about 50 vines. They show up on Thursday, and him and my mom over the weekend were out in the vineyard planting vineyard number one. First 50 vines grew really, really well. So the next year rolled around. That year he ordered about 450. And so that's really where the concept of Treehouse Vineyards kind of came into being. He really didn't even know what he wanted to call it originally, and it was a crazy treehouse he built. So that's where the idea of the actual treehouse came to be as far as the Treehouse Vineyards name. So we, like I say, we planted about 12 years ago. We waited about 5.5-6 years before we actually opened up to the public, and we opened up in November of 2010. We opened up as just a very small mom-and-pop winery, and when I say that, I didn't even work here in the very beginning. For the first 6 months, it was just my mom and dad. Sister and I would come down and help on the weekends, and that's really where we got started. And then about 6 months into it, we started to really get a little crowded. We started to gain some traction from the Charlotte area and the Monroe area as well, once people knew that we were open. We were fortunate to catch some advertising that really helped us out and was able to kind of push us, bring us new customers pretty immediately. And about 6 months into it, I made a comment to my dad one day that one or two of our wines weren't selling very well compared to the other wines we had. So him being the gentleman that he is, he told me that I could take my butt in the back and see what I could do over the weekend. So I came in, blended up a couple of wines, left them for my parents to taste over the weekend. And by the time I ended up getting my voicemail, that she, in the beginning, was telling me how much she loved it, and by the end of it, she told me I better know what I put in it, because they had ended up finishing the bottle off that night. So that was really where my beginning into winemaking had started. I did get very fortunate. I got a chance to live out in California for 3 years. In doing so, I had a buddy out there that became a liquor and wine rep. And every Friday, he was bringing about 20, 30 cases of sample wine around the house. So I was trying to be a good buddy and help him drink it all sometimes. That was also kind of my first exposure to wine, was the California area. And when my dad started talking about doing Treehouse Vineyards, I really didn't know how I was going to help him. And once I did start blending up some wines and looking at that, that was really where my curiosity became. And once that happened, I really got involved in the North Carolina Grape Growers Association and also the Muscadine Association here in North Carolina. And I can't thank and tell you enough how beneficial all the other wineries and winemakers in North Carolina were. You know, I think a lot of people would probably think that nobody would ever want to teach you something, but these guys really did teach us a tremendous amount and really have helped us go from making muscadine wine like your grandfather used to make to really trying to make it like the big commercial guys do. And even, I guess when I say that too, even more the vinifera style. Kind of found in some of my research that a good majority of the muscadine winemakers typically are still making it like their grandfathers did, and they aren't really taking the technology or taking it, advantage of the technologies that are out there in the wine industry. And I really would also, the two guys that really helped out a lot, Mark Fizolowski of Childress Vineyards and Mark Terry of West Bend Vineyards, they really both helped me understand a lot more about wine and really take, I feel like we were making some pretty decent wine in the very beginning, but kind of taking us to the next level that we've been fortunate enough the Asheville Wine and Food Festival that we were able to win 3 silvers and 3 gold medals. We really kind of took us from being the mom and pop to kind of contending for some of the quality wine here in North Carolina and really in this together. And we're really pushing hard to let everybody out there know that North Carolina is a quality wine producing state. And I can't tell you how many different people told me that they had to admit when they heard they were coming to North Carolina for their annual conference, they were a little disappointed because they automatically assumed that, you know, North Carolina, them really had not been known as a quality wine state or, you know, a fantastic wine state at that point. When they left there, they had definitely changed their mind. They had really realized that North Carolina has really upped their game over the last 10 years, and it's really coming into its own, and that's nice to see. And but I really feel like we're starting to knock down that wall a little bit, knock down that stigma a little bit by really trying to make some quality wines. And like I say, we're trying to use as much technology and as much knowledge as we possibly get from the guys that have been making wine for, you know, a very, very long time, and we've been very fortunate with that. My father's really taught me a lot about the wine industry and business as well. Really, our first year, we produced and sold 1,000 cases. Back then, we could only produce about 12 cases in a day. Now we, on a normal bottling day, we'll produce about 200 cases, and this year, we're on pace to sell and produce 4,000 cases. If you ever get into the wine industry, you'll know that space and storage is your biggest dilemma. So when we go from 1,000 cases to 4,000 cases, we not only have to have more bottles, we also have to have more space for tanks and everything else. So it has definitely been a growing process, and it's kind of my dad's brainchild, my mom's property, and then my dad's been nice enough to share it with me and let me kind of help grow the business from once we kind of opened our doors up.
Well, it sounds like you had a what I call a steep learning curve in getting into the wine industry there, Phil.
100%. It was jumping in with both feet. It's a very different thing going from small batches to big batches, but we were very fortunate that people were out there willing to help us train. And, you know, we made a couple mistakes along the way, which is always going to happen in business. One thing that's been very important to us, we want to put a wine out there that we don't feel is quality. So if something's not quite right, we don't want to put it out there because it's our reputation and it's also the reputation of North Carolina. We take that very seriously here at Treehouse Vineyards. I want to make sure that North Carolina is being represented it as best as we can. It's our home state. We want to do something special for the state as well. So just being part of it's been a really neat thing. But there is a big learning curve in it, and we feel that as a state, we're very lucky to have Mark Fizolowski with Childress Vineyards. He's come along and really helped the state get organized and to get us to communicate and to really get our quality as a whole, hopefully better. And we are taking kind of a big step with the muscadine, you know, primarily doing muscadines. We also offer Cabernet and Merlot and a couple of viniferas, but our main focus and our specialty is our muscadine wines and really trying to bridge the gap. And what I mean by that is that stigma of everybody thinking that muscadine wine is always just going to be overly sweet. And then typically a lot of vinifera wines is pretty dry. So we're a little bit in the middle there. And but one thing I always like to tell people, about 80% of the wine sold in the U.S. is sweet wine. And we're also in the middle of a sweet tea country. So if there's a place to be making some sweet wine, this is the place to do it. So
we feel very strongly about the reputation of North Carolina. And 8 years ago when we moved here, there were only 60 wineries in the state. And now I think the last count was 216, including the cidery. So it's grown a lot. The one thing that we have worked so hard here with the French Broad Vignerons to do is to help the industry. We've done some things like training the judges so that we have, from a consumer's point of view, a good wine judging competition at the Asheville Wine Food Festival, where you won gold medals for your Windy Hill, Sunset Hills, and Crystal Creek Muscadine wines, which are fabulous, and a couple other medals, as you mentioned. But we also work with the Great Smoky Mountain Railway out in Bryson City. We select the wines that are served on their wine train experience out there. This allows people from all over the world who come for that little tourist venue to sample only the best North Carolina wines. And they all get off the train saying, oh my goodness, I had no idea North Carolina could produce such good wines. So what you're doing is a keystone for the types of things that we want to see here in the state of North Carolina for the viticulture industry. And certainly I know from not only just winning the gold medals, but tasting many of your wines through a wine club that we belong to, that you've got some fabulous products out there, and we would love to have people from all over the country be able to sample them.
Well, we really do appreciate that, and it is very important to us. And we've been fortunate enough that we have brought people in from all over the country and even other parts of the world. Having our tree houses has put us in a little bit of a unique position. The fact that it creates this little bit of a niche that people want to come check it out and kind of gets their curiosity up. And we've been fortunate enough. We've documented that we've had people from 14 different countries come in and stay in our tree house. And one of the biggest things I would have to say, and one of the biggest compliments I think we get, being a small mom-and-pop winery, and when we go online and look at our reviews, and people are putting on our reviews that we're as nice as any vineyard they've been to in Napa or overseas in Italy or somewhere, it's hard for us sometimes to even imagine and understand that, and really for people to, you know, it'd be different if they were telling us that directly, but be going out on social media and putting those things out there, you know, on their own without us soliciting those, has really kind of blown us away, and it's probably been the greatest compliment that anybody could give us. And I really appreciate you saying what you did about our wines. It's we care a lot about what we do, and we have a lot of pride in it as well. And that all came from my dad. My father is a very, very hard worker. Like I say, grew up on a tobacco farm, and quality is very important to us. And we're always trying to figure out how to continue to grow our quality even better. So it's a very important thing to us, and we do it. We do it for two reasons, like we talked about a second ago. We do it for ourselves, but we also do it because we really do care a lot about North Carolina. And like you say, the North Carolina wine industry has grown tremendously. And the things like what you guys are doing with training judges and everything else is so vitally important, because it really does help the whole state as a whole really grow together and also make sure we're headed in the right direction. And I think that's also part of what's unique for us. I feel very fortunate to be in a pretty exciting time here in North Carolina. You go out and look what California did. A lot of people don't even realize California really didn't get known until 1976. So from a business standpoint, they're still pretty young, and the wine industry in the United States is still pretty young. And I really feel that North Carolina is on the track to really do some special things. You know, a lot of North Carolina wines are even getting shipped over to China nowadays, especially on the muscadine side, because they consider the muscadines to have certain qualities about them that they're looking for. So the muscadine wines are starting to kind of make a little bit of a name for themselves. I think there's a lot of stigma that's been stuck to it, and also a lot of lack of knowledge about muscadines. A lot of people think there's only one, maybe two muscadine grapes out there. There's actually over 120 different varieties. About 10 of those are used for wine. And so we're trying to bring in and use some different grapes that some other people haven't used in order to really make something unique with some of our wines, and using different muscadines. A lot of the wines we do, like you mentioned, Sunset Hills wine, that's three different muscadine grapes going into one wine. So we spend time taking those grapes, making some blends, and really trying to make some wines for the just for everybody, not one in particular niche, just something we feel like that everybody would enjoy, especially you know, here in the North Carolina area, and hopefully soon a little bit farther out as well. So I really think that the muscadine wine over the course of time, if you look at the Moscatos and some different wines that have really become popular over the last couple of years, I really feel like muscadines can bring a little bit of that market as well, and really show some people some unique things with it. So it's very exciting times for us and for the North Carolina wine industry as a whole.
Well, we're very excited about being part of the viticulture industry and our educational efforts we do at our small place here in the mountains. And we'll get back to talking about this in just a little bit. At this point in time, Philip, we're going to take a station break. And hang on, folks. We'll be right back. We've been talking with Philip Norton, managing partner of a family-owned business called the Treehouse Vineyards in Monroe, North Carolina. Hang on for a second. The sponsor for today's program is Hermes Hiking Pole Pedometer. Hermie Halverson lives in Hot Springs, about 14 miles west of Marshall, North Carolina. His cabin is a few yards off the Appalachian Trail. Over the years, he has seen hundreds of hikers passing by his place. He has also met a few now and then in his favorite watering hole in downtown Hot Springs. Their biggest complaint was they can't accurately gauge how far they've hiked along the trail. Most of them wear a pedometer that tells them how many steps they've taken, but it doesn't tell them how far they have walked in any particular hiking trip. Hermie works in the Walmart in Weaverville and was a greeter, and he uses a handheld counter to keep track of how many people enter and leave the store. One day, he had the bright idea about making a hiking stick he could sell to all of the hikers along the Appalachian Trail. He bought a hand counter and took it home to his workshop out behind his outhouse. There he disassembled the old wind-up clock he found at the recycle center. He made a special slip disc so it would only punch his handheld counter once when it had been ratcheted 2,000 times. He had calculated that the average person steps about 32 inches to the handheld counter indicated 1 and was activated 2,000 times, or exactly 1 mile. He hollowed out a hiking pole and placed a spring-loaded shaft through a hole in the bottom of the hiking stick. Every time the pole hit the ground, it would increment 1 notch until it was activated 2,000 times, and the hand counter mounted on top of the pole would show 1 mile. He began demonstrating his hiking pole pedometer to hikers, and they loved it. Before long, everyone was using Hermie's hiking pole pedometer. Hermie had to hire a few part-time workers to keep up with the business. Hermie adds a note of caution. If you use your hiking pole pedometer for poking at snakes and spiders, it won't give you an accurate distance on your hike. Hermie's hiking pole pedometer is another special product made in the good old U.S. of A. here in Madison County, North Carolina. You can buy Hermie's hiking pole pedometer at Hermie's Hiking Lodge just off the Appalachian Trail or at Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall for only $1.298. And now back to our regular program. Welcome back, folks. We've been talking with Philip Norden, the managing partner of a family-owned business down in Monroe, North Carolina, called Treehouse Vineyards. They specialize in some of the best muscadine wines you go find any place in the States, my opinion anyway. Philip, talk a little bit about the specific wines that you make. Talk about some of the processing, how big the tanks are you have, your capacities, you know, the size of your vineyard, the size of your wines, that kind of information that our listeners might be interested in.
You got it, Chuck. We use 500-gallon tanks, and then we also have a couple 160-gallon tanks as well. We got enough storage for about 3,000 gallons at this point. We are going to probably be getting rid of our 500-gallon tanks and going to 1,200-gallon tanks, hopefully over the next year to 2 years, because we just built a new tank room. But as far as the way we do everything, our muscadine takes us about 2 weeks to harvest everything. We typically start harvesting around the middle of September. We try to let our grapes get up to about 18 brick. Our red muscadines, we typically leave those on the skins for maybe about 4 to 5 days. One of the problems, the theory is the seeds. Seeds are very acidic, and letting muscadine wine sit on the grape skins as long as we do with the seeds in there really, really makes it a very tart, kind of gives it a bitter flavor at the very end of the process. And so we found that a good range for us is 4 to 5 days with our red wines. Our white wines, we typically do leave those on the skins for about a day. I don't take them off immediately. Found that the flavor just wasn't as full as we wanted it to be, so we typically leave our white grapes on the skins for about a day or so. Once we do that, we bring it in, and we do use dry yeast, and then we also typically bump our sugar level up, our bricks level up, about 4 more bricks. That way we end up around 22 bricks, 24 bricks, so that we end up with 11 to 12% alcohol on the back end. We bring that in, immediately go ahead and get the temperature down to about 55 degrees in the very beginning, maybe even bring it down to 45 before we put the yeast in order really to pull the heat out of it. Because if you don't know, when you're fermenting at larger batches, when we start out in 5-gallon carboys back in the day, the heat wasn't a big deal. But our 100 or our 500-gallon tanks, once they're in fermentation, they will get up to over 100 degrees just from the thermochemical reaction that's put off through the fermentation process. And so we got to extract that heat out of there. And I can tell you that that's probably one of the first things that really started to make our wine better. And when we weren't able to do that in the beginning, Our wine had a little bit of unsavory finish to it a little bit, and it's by being able to temperature control the wine during fermentation, it has really helped the wine to make it a lot smoother and a lot cleaner tasting once it's a finished product. And that was probably the first thing that we were able to change once we got started that really helped us to change our quality of wine. It was maybe one of the biggest significant changes right off the bat, and that's something that's very important. If you can control the temperature during fermentation, it really helped the wine to be a lot smoother on the back end.
Just for purposes of understanding a little bit more about the size of your facility, how big in square feet, more or less, is your winery operation?
Winery operation, it's about 2,500 square feet as far as the winery itself. If you include our tasting room and everything, we're about 4,900 square feet. So when we started out, we only were about 2,000 square feet. So we've been really under construction since the day we opened. The day we opened, we could only see maybe about 8 customers per tasting, and we do a tasting now. It sounds a little nuts when I say this, but it's kind of almost hard to believe, but I can promise you it's true. We do tastings during the summertime. We've had to go to a format that we do tastings every hour on the hour. We do tastings sometimes with up to 100 to 125 people in one tasting for 1 hour. So once that started to occur, we had to increase our capacity very quickly. So the first thing, or what we just finished about a year ago, was our new tank room. The new tank room is about 2,000 square feet. And this time we were able to make it where it had a vaulted ceiling in it so we can bring in much larger and taller tanks. And we're going to try to go vertical instead of being as horizontal as we've been with our facility here. And we also went from a little one-head machine to fill up bottles to where now we use a six-head machine. And we still do everything pretty hands-on, but we went from producing 12 cases in a day to around 200 cases in a day, and we bottle about every 10 days or so. And but we, in the beginning, our biggest tanks were 500 gallons, and then our small tanks that we kind of use as secondary tanks if we, don't have exactly enough room, or 160-gallon tanks. But hopefully, over the next year or so, our 500-gallon tanks will turn into our smaller tanks. We'll go to 1,200-gallon tanks and be much taller. So that's kind of our growth plan over the next year to 2 years, is to really kind of change out those tanks.
Just don't change your quality there, buddy.
No. And that's one thing we haven't jumped and done everything as fast as we wanted to, because we really want to make sure that we keep the quality. The quality is the number one thing, and that's what's taken a little bit of time. Even from going and making it at 100 gallons at a time to 500 gallons at a time, it takes a lot more time, effort, energy to really tweak the wine. And back in the day, we probably only had to check it 2 or 3 times as far as kind of the finished product. Now I'll go in and probably taste it maybe 6 to 7 times and really do some small minor tweaks here and there to make sure that it's exactly what we want. And that's the most important thing to us. And sometimes the staff looks at me like we're nuts, because we really do kind of overly micromanage that part of the process to make sure that the end product's exactly what we're looking for.
That makes your customers very happy. How about telling us real quickly, how many grapes do you have in the ground? What's the acreage?
We're about 7 acres of grapes right now. It might be about 6.5 now. We just had to take up about 0.5 acre, unfortunately, because we had to make a little bit bigger room for our parking lot. So we're about 6.5 acres, a little under around 1,000 vines currently. We do have 37 acres here on the property. We have about another 10 acres that we can turn into grape vines. So we've been very fortunate that we've been able to purchase some other grapes from some other vineyards. So we don't grow everything just here on our property. Part of the growth that we ended up doing, we did have to go out and resource out some grapes from other parts of North Carolina, but everything we do does come from North Carolina. But this year we're actually going to be probably bring on hopefully 1 acre of vines per year. We want to plant 1 acre per year up until about having another 7 acres or so. That way we end up with about 14 to 15 acres of grape vines. One of the other reasons, there are a couple of wines that we're producing that there isn't that many grapes out there of. Some of the bigger Carlos and Noble are your most popular Muscadine wine, or grapes that everybody grows out there. But we're using some Magnolia grapes, Muscadine grapes. We're also using some Doreen Muscadine grapes that are very unique in their flavor and in their characteristics. And one of the neatest things with our Doreen Muscadines that we're doing, I was told by other Muscadine vineyards, that you could not make a good wine from the Doreen grape. And that's ended up being some of our customers' favorite wines is from that grape. So it's made us feel pretty awesome that sometimes when people tell you you can't do something, and you know, you end up not necessarily even proving wrong, but you know, kind of proving yourself wrong a little bit, knowing that you can really end up making something that people really enjoy. And that's what's kind of unique about Muscadines. There's not been a lot of research and development. It still is kind of a newer grape as far as the industry is concerned, in my opinion, especially to the mass public. And, you know, it's been something we've known about here in the South for a long, long time. Grew up in the South, had them wild out in the woods, but there are a lot of other Muscadines out there that do have some, they still have the Muscadine flavor, but they also carry some of their own characteristics as well. And the Crystal Creek that you mentioned a little bit earlier, that's one that's really been amazing to us. That's made with a Magnolia Muscadine grape, and we have some people that even try to compare it to a sweet or semi-sweet Chardonnay sometimes, and some different flavors in there that people pick up on. But one of the neat things too that you mentioned earlier about Muscadines is how people are kind of looking at them. But I'll never forget, I had a lady walk in when we first opened. She looked at our tasting room, and her face was so dejected. She goes, "Oh, I cannot stand Muscadine wines, but I'm here, so I'll taste what you got." So she tasted the first one, had a very blank look on her face. She tasted the second one. She looked at us, and she goes, "You know what? I feel like the biggest jerk in the world." She goes, "I walk past every Muscadine tent at any festival I'm at." She goes, "This wine is some of the best wine I've ever tasted in my life." And so here was a lady that had a preconceived notion and thought that all Muscadine had to taste the same. But one thing that we do a little bit differently too, that I can speak on, is I do know some wineries out there use corn syrup in order to sweeten their wine on the back end. And one thing we found that really makes a nice big difference, we still use granulated sugar, and by doing so we feel like it still gives our wine a very crisp and clean taste. We really try to make sure that none of our Muscadine wines have a syrupy flavor to it. When you do get into some sweet wines, sometimes they have the syrupy flavor in there. And just found that a lot of people really don't like that to their palate, and so we've been able to stick with granulated sugar, and by doing so we really feel like it gives our wine a nice clean and crisp taste. Even though it might be a semi-sweet to a sweet wine, it still has a very clean taste to it, and that's been incredibly important to us.
Okay. Well, Philip, you've got a taste buds all a Twitter now, so we need to let folks know how they can find you and how they can find your wines.
You got it. Well, the first thing you want to do is get online and look up treehousevineyards.com. We have a wonderful website that will kind of take you around how you can plan a visit here if you want to check out the treehouse, if you want to come down and taste some wine with us. We're open 7 days a week. And so you can come down any day of the week. We do our tastings on the hour. During the week, we have tours of the vineyard, or of the winery, I should say, at 2 and 4 o'clock. On the weekends, on Saturdays and Sundays, we do tastings and tours by the hour, every hour. So unfortunately, right now, the only place you can buy our wines is here at our facility here at Treehouse Vineyards in Monroe, North Carolina. And the reason that is we've grown so fast. You mentioned a few minutes ago the quality. I want to make sure that we can continue to grow our quality in order to grow the volume that we need to produce in order to go into distribution. So distribution is still a little bit out in the future, probably another year to 2 years away for us, because, like I say, we really want to make sure that we got all of our ducks in a row and that our quality is going to continue to be top-notch once we do that. So the worst thing in the world would be to put out a product out there that was subpar. So come on down to Monroe, North Carolina, and if you get a chance, and we'd love to have you.
Well, we've been speaking with Philip Norton on the phone today. He's the managing partner of the family-owned business called Treehouse Vineyards in Monroe, North Carolina. In addition to some of the wonderful wines that you'll be tasting there, you'll have a chance to even maybe try to stay in one of his famous treehouses there, or at least rent one for an hour to enjoy the view with a glass of wine. Philip, we really appreciate your taking time to be with us today, and certainly wish you good luck with your future developments and the growth endeavors for the future.
Chuck, thank you so much, and once again, thank you guys for all that you're doing for North Carolina. We did training and everything, and I just can't thank you guys enough for promoting North Carolina wines and allowing us to be part of it. Thank you so much.
You're certainly welcome, Philip, and folks, we'll call that a wrap for today's program. This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio from Madison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers!